It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
Welcome back. It is the Brady and the Bunch podcast here. It is the end of June, our final episode of June. And you know, it was interesting. A couple weeks ago when I put out on social media that I wanted to extend the podcast beyond just our regular listeners all the time, I put out on social media, I said, who should we get? And a lot of great suggestions. The first one that came in was the guy who's sitting with us now. So joining us now is a multiple-time Vermont Broadcaster of the Year, legendary voice in the area. It's our friend George Como. George, how are you?
I'm good, Brady. Thank you very much. And it's good to hear my agent is out there doing what he needs to do to keep my name out in public.
Multiple agents, because multiple people on social media are like, George Como, George Como, George Como needed to come on the podcast. So here you are.
Well, here I am and glad to be here.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. You know, I was going to start this by saying it's George Como, voice of, well, the Vermont Lake Monsters, voice of Norwich men's hockey. And then I was like, you know what? There's a lot of things that George Como is the voice of. So why don't you tell me all the things you have been the voice of throughout your career?
You don't have time.
Yeah, then we really, only have 45 minutes.
You really don't have time. Well, gosh, probably the one that jumps to people's minds around here first off is UVM hockey, which I did for 18 years, starting back in the mid to late 70s. Tom Cheek, who was the play-by-play voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, took that job from here. He had worked in Burlington.
Wow, so he was your partner, or you took over for him?
Well, I did the pregame and postgame shows when he was doing UVM hockey in like 1975, 76. And I was fresh out of college, just looking to get an opportunity to do some sports gigs.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to UVM.
Wow, okay.
And graduated in 72, went to work in this building, believe it or not, back for the old WEZF-FM, which is now the same frequency as Star 92.9.
Yeah. Crazy.
And the job was a classic job. They were 8 and 12-hour shifts. All of the music programming on the radio station at the time was on big 12-inch reels, and the reels ran out every 2 hours, and my job was to sit in the studio, wait for the reels to run down, replace them, and I got to do 2 minutes of news at the top of the hour.
So were you interested, when you first got into the business, were you interested in music DJing, or were you always interested in talking?
No, I wanted to do sports.
Okay, so you knew that right away.
I wanted to do sports, gosh, going back to high school. And didn't really take advantage of the opportunity at UVM as much as I should have at the student station. So I came out. I found a guy who was impressed. Believe it or not, back in those days, UVM actually had a degree in broadcasting. Hmm. And I got a degree in broadcasting from UVM. And the general manager of the radio station was impressed enough to bring me on board. And at the time, the same people who owned the radio station also owned what is now WVNY, TV 22 at the time. Yeah. And they decided to start a local news program, made me the sports guy, and I did that for a couple of years. But sitting on the set was nice, and I've done that over the course of my career, but I wanted to be at games doing play-by-play. And when Tom left WVMT to go to Toronto, he recommended me, and I got the job. And I did UVM for 18 years, culminating my last couple of years with UVM were the years of Tim Thomas, Eric Perrin, and Martin St. Louis. So
you get the job. It's got to be mid-20s at the latest for UVM. I mean, you couldn't have been very old when you got that job.
No, I was, well, when Tom left, I was 26, 27.
Wow. Now, was that the dream gig for you at the time, doing UVM hockey?
I would have stayed very happily in that job for the rest of my life. I say that. I actually, you know, people told me I was pretty good, and I got a lot of positive feedback. And I did apply for a couple of jobs elsewhere, was a candidate for the football and hockey job at the University of Wisconsin, but it didn't quite fall my way. And no, but yeah, to answer your question, UVM as a kid growing up, that was, you know, because I grew up in the Burlington area. I've lived here my whole life. And that was the prestige job in the business, and I was very happy doing that.
You know, you got to call Frozen Fours, you got to call UVM back when there was, you know, not that there hasn't been, but a lot of success and a lot of history being built at Gutterson Fieldhouse. What are some of your best memories of calling UVM hockey?
Oh, gosh. Well, going to the Frozen Four in Cincinnati in 1996 is at the top of the list. That, of course, the famous game where the ice turned to slush and UVM ultimately lost the game on a hand pass at the end of the second overtime. So that was one of the highlights. But gosh, you talk about some of the players back in the 80s. We had a great, great run of teams. Players like Ian Boyce and Kyle McDonough and Jeff Shulman, who's now the athletic director, was on that team. Jerry Tarrant was on that team. Wow. And then, of course, in the early 90s, we had Aaron Miller, who went on to a great career in the NHL as a defenseman. His running mate and good buddy was John LeClair, who turned into a pretty good player as well.
Yeah, he turned pretty good.
So, there have been some great runs, some great wins, and some very frustrating losses along the way, but that all is part of the deal.
Now, was it hard for you to separate your fandom from, because I know you to be extremely professional, but when you talk about that gig being the most prestigious gig in the area, you grew up a UVM fan, you went to UVM, did you find yourself being a fan, or was it able to separate?
I was a screaming homer.
Okay. And do you look back at it and say, I wouldn't have done it any differently, or do you look back and say, I should have been more professional?
I probably should have been a little more professional. But again, I always say, because even today doing Norwich, I'm a bit of a homer, although I try to play it down the middle as much as I can. But you do have to remember two things. Number one is the audience you're playing to. Back in those days doing those UVM games, we were playing to a UVM audience. It's not like today where the games are on the internet and people are listening all over the world. It was much more of a local audience. So that maybe is a weak excuse, but it's kind of an excuse for doing it. And the other thing is that you've just got to take what you can get and at that particular time, I think that's what the audience wanted. And bottom line, you're playing to your listeners.
Now, I have heard rumors, and you can dispel them, or we can just no comment, move on. But why did you stop broadcasting at UVM? Was there a falling out there? Did you leave? What happened?
Well, it was a falling out, but it was not with UVM. Okay. It was with the management of the radio station that had the rights at the time.
Gotcha.
It was a dispute over whether or not I was going to be a full-time or part-time employee, the amount of salary that I was going to be recompensed for. And basically what it came down to, another radio station in the market decided that they wanted to take UVM hockey away from the radio station that had the rights. Hmm. They approached me if I would come to work for them. And I did that, and it was a year. There was still a year remaining on the contract with the other radio station.
So you were there, but UVM wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I moved to the new station, ownership there, of the feeling that that would be enough to drive the university to switch stations. To my surprise, it was not enough. They elected to stay with the original station, and that's where we went from there.
So how did you feel when that happened? Were you upset that at the station you had gone to, that they weren't able to bring the college over like you had thought? Were you upset with the college that they didn't go over like you thought? Or was it just kind of like, hey, that's business, and I took a shot, and it struck out, and that was it?
Well, ultimately, it was, hey, that's business, that's the way it goes. But at the time, I was very disappointed in UVM. Because I had been told nothing during my entire time doing UVM about, you're the best, you do such a great job, you're a key part of this team, we're very lucky to have you. But when push came to shove, dollars figured in ahead of individual representation, or however you want to put it. It was somewhat disappointing, let's put it that way, that UVM did not support me in that move. But again, business-wise, bottom line is the bottom line.
How long did it take for you to get over all that? I mean, have you been to a UVM game since? Will you listen to games if they're on? Will you watch them if they're on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am still very much a UVM fan. I have continued to be through the years. Get to games whenever I have, although the schedule prevents me from getting there as often as I would like. I've been, like everybody else, waiting anxiously to see if the whole new arena project actually comes to fruition. It looks like it's going to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I remain a UVM guy. I still have a little green and gold in my blood, although a lot of maroon and gold has replaced that over the course of time.
Yeah, so you are now you have been the voice of Norwich men's hockey for a long time. I worked at Norwich, let's see, fall of 2012, winter 2012, spring 2013. That's where we met the very first time, and you were the voice of the cadets back then too. So how long has your relationship with Norwich been? Like, how long of a gap was there between UVM and Norwich?
There was one season between the end of my UVM gig and the beginning of my Norwich gig.
So we're more than 20 years now, the voice
of
Norwich.
Yeah, 21 years.
Wow.
21 heading into 22 this fall. And it's been a great run. What basically happened was Norwich was in the process of building and opening Kreuzberg Arena, and people there decided they wanted to make a big splash, and they had never been on every game on the radio before. They had never had full season coverage. They decided to do it. They decided to go with a station in Waterbury where I had a lot of friends, knew a lot of people. A couple of phone calls were made, and I ended up with the Norwich gig.
So a couple of national championships on the men's side, multiple All-Americans, and one of the most storied programs in all of Division III hockey. When you look at it and say 18 years UVM, 21 years at Norwich, I mean, that's almost equal time for both levels. How do your Norwich memories compare to the UVM ones?
Well, it's always nicer winning.
Yeah. That's true. You've done a lot of that with Norwich.
Yeah, we've won it four times. We're in the national championship game on several other occasions, just this last March, losing to Wisconsin Stevens Point in the national championship game.
Yeah.
So there have been a lot of great memories at Norwich, a lot of tremendous games, tremendous wins, playing in an outstanding facility. I mean, I love UVM. It's always been kind of fun to point to the fact that even though UVM is the Division I program in the state, the top two Division III programs have a way better facility, both Norwich and Middlebury, than UVM has had. Hmm. Of course, that's about to change. But, the Norwich run has been spectacular. Of course, working with one of the great coaches in the history of college hockey and Mike McShane, and now with a brilliant young coach, Cam Ellsworth, taking his place. The Norwich program is solid year in and year out. And it really is the old cliche. They definitely do not rebuild. They reload year to year.
Now, you mentioned a couple minutes ago that you once applied for a job at the University of Wisconsin, which certainly would have been an extremely high-profile job. When you look back at it, are you happy you didn't get that kind of job so that you could stay in the area, or did you ever wish you had gone on to somewhere, quote, bigger?
Oh, gosh, mixed emotions, very much mixed emotions. I have had an outstanding career. It's the old, big fish in a small pond kind of a thing. And for all, the fact that people are asking you to put me on your podcast is testimony to the fact that I've established a pretty good position for myself within the Vermont sports community. At the same time, sure, I think, in my prime years, and I'm a little past prime now, but I'm still doing reasonably well. But in my prime years, I think I would have been good enough to do NHL play-by-play.
Wow, really?
And I always kind of will always kind of reflect on the fact, you know, what would have happened if I did not. I was kidding earlier about my agent. I've never had an agent.
You've never needed one. It's just spoken for itself.
And, but to make the move to go to that next level, getting one would have been a key element, and I did not do that. And, you know, so, yeah, there's a little bit of reflection, a little bit of regret about what might have been if, but it's been a great career here.
Are there broadcasters that you grew up loving, idolizing, studying, or was it a lot harder back then when you were growing up, 60s, 70s, to do that because there just weren't as many games available? So you couldn't, like, now you could go study a Doc Emrick if you want to be a young hockey broadcaster. Could you do that back when you were growing up?
Well, you could, but it was harder. The guys that I remember as a kid growing up listening to, of course, we're only 90 miles from Montreal, and actually I sat down at night and listened to games on the radio. You know, it's different now.
We endorse that at the radio station.
But a lot of your audience is listening online or the lots of different ways. I had to listen to the radio, and I in high school, just this was baseball, not hockey, but in high school, I decided one summer to keep track in a notebook of every baseball game that I listened to over the course of that one summer. I had my old little AM radio, and I would flip around, and you can get great long-distance bounce single signals at night. I'd listen to games from Chicago and Baltimore and St. Louis and all over the dial. And by the end of the summer, I was up over 1,000 baseball games.
Wow.
That I had listened to that summer. I hadn't listened to the whole game, but certainly portions of it. But in hockey, we're 90 miles from Montreal, and they had one of the great broadcasters of all time, a guy named Danny Gallivan, who was the English play-by-play voice of the Canadians. And he was a guy I kind of emulated. There were other guys as well. Dan Kelly, who was the play-by-play voice of the St. Louis Blues, and also did a lot of games on NBC, who had the NHL rights at those times. There were just a bunch of them. I loved baseball. I was a huge fan of the Red Sox guys, from Kurt Gowdy to Ken Coleman, and then to Ned Martin, and a whole bunch of people they've gone through the years. So, yeah, I like to say I probably took a little bit of what is now considered to be my style away from some of the greats who did the game, and little pieces from each one.
You know, in addition to listening to you and hearing firsthand how good you are, in addition to hearing how good you are, I've heard stories just kind of like about your preparation and how meticulous you are. But I've also heard that you have an uncanny gift to when you do hockey and you look at the lines, you look at the rosters. Basically, it takes one look at the rosters and you know who everybody is. I mean, that's amazing.
Someone is lying to you.
Okay, that's not true.
Well, generally in hockey, you know, it's easy when you cover a team every night because you know your own team.
You know your own team. Yeah.
So you only have to worry about the other team, and you always have a line chart. Nowadays, certainly in Division I and even now in Division III, most of the opposing schools provide you with a chart before the game.
Yeah.
And you try to work on it. You try to memorize names. You try to get the key guys down. And for the first period, I found myself relying on the chart a lot. Second period, a little less. And by the third period, I was able to flow along pretty well. But, yeah, it's not instantaneous recognition by any chance whatsoever.
When I was the play-by-play announcer for Oswego men's hockey, I would always try to just find some kind of characteristic. You know, okay, Jones has long hair. You know, just something like, Smith has the clear face mask, whereas everyone else has the cage. Like, that was how I used it. I just tried to figure out, okay, what's a defining characteristic? Or if it's basketball, hey, this guy's wearing the armband. You know, it's just something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I did it.
Yeah, that is a good technique to use. with me, I relied very much on the numbers, and certainly in basketball, when I did basketball play-by-play, you do get, because you can see the guys, you can see the faces.
This guy has a mustache, this guy has a beard.
The long hair thing, although that sometimes becomes a problem because particularly now doing women's sports, sometimes the long hair is so far down the back you can't read the number anymore.
That was one of the, you know, and that's, it's, we kind of, you and I are kind of chuckling as you say that, but that's very much true, because when I would do Oswego hockey, same thing, you know, you can't read the nameplate. Sometimes the number is covered up.
Yep.
That is extremely difficult. And the other one, which I know you get, is, this one's probably more prevalent in hockey and football, but some of these jersey combos, you just can't even see the name and numbers because it's so hard.
Oh, boy, are you opening up a door for me right now. I get to vent now.
Go right ahead.
My wonderful friends at Norwich, and I've done the games for 21 years. I love them. They're great guys. They got to stop wearing the damn camo jerseys. They drive me crazy. The Norwich home jerseys they have a home camo and a road camo. The road camo is tolerable, but the home camo, it is really camo. It is impossible to call the numbers.
Because I think they're red. No, it's kind of like a grayish.
It's red. Like a snow camo.
Yeah.
Like they would wear, the mountain division would wear skiing across the Alps or something. And it's very difficult to read them. And they're in the process of putting new uniforms together this summer. And Coach Ellsworth, if you're listening out there, please put a more readable number on the back of those home camos. What happened too last, they got on a tremendous streak after the holidays last year. And they, as long as they kept winning, they were not going to go away from the camos. So the more they won, the more they stayed with them, the more difficult it became for me to complain about it because, hey, they're winning.
How do you find that the fan bases are similar or different between Norwich and UVM? Because it feels to me, as kind of an outsider, that they're both rabid and they both are really, really invested community-wise in what the university's hockey program is doing. How do you find the fan bases compare?
I think they're very similar. Of course, Norwich has had more success, so they're maybe spoiled a little bit. And UVM fans are kind of an angry group right now because of the way things have been going lately.
Yeah.
But no, I think they are very similar. They're very supportive. Both schools, well, when I was at UVM, they had a thing called Friends of UVM Hockey, yep, which has kind of gravitated into other things now. But they were extremely supportive of the program, raised a lot of money to help the coaches, Jim Cross and Mike Gilligan, back in those years when I was doing the games. And Norwich has the Norwich Blue Line Club, which has just done a spectacular job of helping Mike McShane and now Cam Ellsworth finance a lot of the extra items. The thing I noticed right away, Grady, when I went to Brady. I know.
I know.
The thing I noticed, Brady, right away when I went to Norwich was, this is a Division I program or a Division III program where you're treated where you feel, where the players feel they're in a Division I program, because everything is done first class.
You know, you mentioned Friends of UVM Hockey, and that sparked my mind. Friends of UVM Baseball is the group that continues to want to get baseball back at UVM, and I hope to have some of those guys. I think Jim Carter is the ringleader of
yes,
that.
Yes, he is.
So he's the guy that I want to get on the podcast as we move into July. Did you ever call any UVM baseball games before the program went away?
I did. We had a cable TV deal, and we did a number of games over the years. Sat through some very chilly springs at Centennial Field doing UVM. Didn't do a lot of games, but certainly did more than a few.
Would you want the program to come back?
Oh, ideally I would. I mean, right now, coming back, they would have one of the best facilities for college baseball in the Northeast, and it would be a spectacular thing if they were able to come back. Having said that, I fully understand the reasoning behind UVM's decision. I mean, it is extremely difficult. Well, hell, we found that this spring in high school sports around the area. It's just extremely difficult some springs to get games in. Meanwhile, UVM has made a commitment to lacrosse. I am not a huge lacrosse fan. I think it hurts baseball on the high school level. Mm-hmm. But it does fit with what UVM is doing. They've done a wonderful job of creating great facilities up there for soccer, field hockey, and lacrosse. I'd love to see baseball come back, but realistically, it would be very difficult now for UVM to manage to make that thing work, I think.
It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, talking with legendary Vermont broadcaster George Como. If we drop these every Tuesday and Thursday as close to noon as we can, if you want to be on the podcast as a guest, you can message me, Brady, at 1013thegame.com. You can find the podcast on Facebook at 101.3thegame, on Twitter at 1013thegame, and then however else you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, just give us a 5-star rating. You'll get notifications as to when the podcasts are coming out. So we talk about UVM baseball playing at Centennial Field. You have been the voice of the Lake Monsters and the Vermont Expos since inception. Is that
the beginning? Well, I was there at the beginning. There were some stretches when I did not do the games, depending upon who the radio station that had the rights wanted to be involved in doing it. But yeah, they've had the franchise now for 25 years. I think I've probably done about 20 years of their games.
Do you see yourself as more of a baseball or hockey announcer?
Well, the way I answer that question is I see myself as more of probably a hockey announcer, but if you ask me which sport I enjoy doing the most, I would say baseball.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know, just because I've been a baseball fan since I was a kid. I've been listening to the Red Sox on the radio since I was 6 or 7 years old. That's a long time. And I thoroughly enjoy baseball. I follow baseball religiously. And with hockey, I love it too. It's clearly number two on my list ahead of the other major sports. But while I'm probably better known for doing hockey because I've done more prestigious things and so on and so forth, baseball has a very special place in my heart. And Como, you call one more game and that's it, I would probably make it baseball. And I tell people to this day, I would kill for one season doing the Red Sox.
Really?
1 year doing the Red Sox full season, then I'd pack it in and go to the home.
Well, you're closing in on 70 years old. Why do you keep coming back? Like, why do you keep wanting to do this?
I need the money.
I don't, somehow I'm not buying that.
Well, no, well, that really is part of it. You don't make a ton of money in this business in markets like the city of Burlington or the state of Vermont. So the paycheck does carry some significance. I really, though, Brady, I just thoroughly enjoy what I do. You know, how many guys get to go cover sports, get to every game they want to go to for free, get to meet some outstanding athletes, great coaches, and especially hockey? And this is one of the real pluses for hockey. When you live in Vermont, hockey makes that winter go by a lot faster than it would otherwise.
Now, you've gotten to call Norwich playing at Fenway Park. We speak of the Red Sox. They've done Frozen Fenway a couple of times. What is that experience like for a broadcaster?
That was outstanding. I've done it twice, and Norwich actually won both times that we played there.
Babson once, I think, they played, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was Babson both times.
Okay, Babson both times. That would make sense.
Yeah, and we got to work. I literally was in the Nesson broadcast booth. That's where our broadcast location was.
Can you see easily the action on the ice from up above like that?
Well, you can follow the generic flow of play, and Norwich was not wearing camos on either of those occasions, so you could see the numbers reasonably well. But you did have the advantage of the fact that the big scoreboard in center field was running a constant flow of play-by-play. Gotcha. So you could kind of work off that a little bit as well.
National championship game or Frozen Fenway? What's the better experience for you, the broadcaster?
Well, for me, walking into the press box at Fenway Park, knowing you're going to call a game here tonight, that was a pretty special experience. But it doesn't really compare with a national championship game, be it any of the number of them that we've had with Norwich or the Frozen Four opportunity we had at UVM. Those are special moments. And I've had others with UVM basketball. I was lucky enough to call UVM women's basketball during that run they had in the 90s where they went one year they went undefeated all season down till they lost the first game in the NCAA tournament and stuff like that. So I've had with various teams, I've had a chance to cover some great runs, but I think Frozen Fenway certainly would have a high place on my list.
Have you ever had anything happen, just given where we are, and because I know how radio works, has there ever been a time where the equipment didn't work, you couldn't get on the air, giant snowstorm, and you couldn't make the game? There has, somewhere in a 30-plus year career, 40-plus year career, there has to be a story like that.
Oh, gosh, there are a bunch of them. Don't think I've ever missed a game because of the weather.
That's amazing to me.
But there have been some situations where it's been close. Back in the day when I did UVM, we would travel in the radio station's van. We would drive to the games, and we had our own little entourage. I would be there with Pat Thornton, who was my play-by-play guy, or who was my color guy back in those years. Ted Ryan from the Free Press would always travel with us. Usually we had one of Ted's daughters or one of my sons along with us on the trip. And we would drive. I remember we drove from Burlington to Princeton in a blizzard. That was sort of difficult, but we did make it. Tell you, the closest I ever came to missing a game was actually with the Lake Monsters. Back in the day, we did road games. And we were playing the Aberdeen Ironbirds.
That's a long trip.
Oriole affiliate. Yeah, we're in Aberdeen, Maryland. It's the final game or final weekend of the regular season. And the Ironbirds and the Lake Monsters, it had a rain out, and they were making it up on the final day of the regular season by playing a doubleheader. And they played the first game. It was raining and miserable. There was nobody in the ballpark. We played the first game. I can't even remember if Vermont won or lost. But the game was over, and we got a call from, we were told, the clubhouse, saying that they had just decided to scrub the second game. Mm-hmm. Second game wasn't going to happen. So we packed up the car, packed up the equipment, loaded it into the car, and started the long drive back to Vermont. We got about 10 miles, and we're just twiddling with the radio dial trying to find something to listen to. And we stumble onto the Ironbird station to hear, there has been a delay, but we are going to start the second game in 20 minutes.
Unbelievable.
So we had to get to the first exit on the highway.
Did you ever consider just keep going?
No, couldn't do that. We missed a half inning.
Wow.
We got back. We got set up. They only played five innings, and the game was called. And the story is the Aberdeen Ball Club was owned by the Ripken brothers.
Yeah.
And if they canceled that second game, they would have lost the season ticket money from the people that had bought tickets. Even though there was nobody really there at the ballpark, the tickets were sold.
Yeah.
And so one of the Ripken brothers came into the press box and said, forget that. We are playing the second game.
That is unbelievable. And I got to imagine, just because I know how it goes on the on all sides of it, not only do you guys have to drive back, get all the equipment, get it all set up, you probably had somebody in here pushing the buttons that needed to come back also to be able to engineer the game.
We were very lucky because back in those days, the station had not gone to a full automated format yet. So they needed a warm body in the studio in order to run
things. Oh, at all times.
So there was still somebody there.
Now, you mentioned bringing your sons with you on some trips. You to do the job that you do and to have the career that you've had, you had to have had an extremely supportive family, because you're talking about being gone a lot over the course of your life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my wife is an angel. She don't let her hear I said that. Yeah. But
how long have you guys been married?
We've been married for 35, coming up on 36 years. And she has endured it all, and a lot of activities. One of my sons played youth hockey, and God knows how many early morning trips to god-awful places in the snow she had to take alone because I was away somewhere on a road trip. It's not an easy thing, and you know, there's not a lot I can say other than the fact that I've been blessed. I know a lot of guys in the business who have seen marriages kind of come to an end because it was just too much for the partner to handle, and I've been very lucky in that regard.
As you've gotten older, has it gotten harder to do the broadcast and deal with some of the travel, et cetera?
Well, yeah, a little bit. I do miss going on the road with the Lake Monsters, but I do 38 home games. And if you do, we used to do 50. We do 38 home games and like a dozen road games. And it's nice to have those dozen days off so you can do some other things in the summer that you would not be able to do otherwise. So from that aspect, it is a little easier. The other thing, my wife now is getting to the point where she is trying to schedule time off at work so she can travel with me on some of the road trips for Norwich.
Oh, that's nice.
To help me out. We kind of get a long weekend out of it, and she's able to help me move equipment in and out of buildings and do the kind of things, because we still have places where we go where setting up for a radio broadcast. I talked about our Division III facilities here in Vermont at Norwich, Middlebury, of course, across the lake at Plattsburgh. Great facilities, welcoming broadcasters. But some of the places you go in Division III, it's not the same way. I don't know if you went on the road very much when you did Oswego.
I did not, because I only did TV, and the radio station was the only one that traveled. Now the TV station will travel too, but that wasn't the case when I was in school.
Well, there are places where it's a difficult setup.
Yeah.
I got new equipment this past season, which allows me to go directly via cell phone back to the radio station. But back in the day when we had to plug in a landline, I know when I went to Skidmore to get to do Norwich games at Skidmore, I had to run 250 feet of phone cable from the back of the Zamboni room in order to get it out to the broadcast location. So, you know, that's the kind of thing, as you get older, it gets a little more difficult to do some of that stuff. But, hey, I'm not complaining. I still get to do the game ultimately, and that's the bottom line.
Well, you mentioned needing some help, and I won't focus on this, but I'm just curious, and some people obviously know that you are battling Parkinson's disease. Is that something that you find to be debilitating when it comes to the broadcast, or is it something that's still manageable at this point?
Well, no, it's still manageable, but you're sitting here, and folks, this is radio, not TV. I am in jiggle mode right now. My two hands are going left and right and all over the place. I try to sit on my hands occasionally.
I thought you were just nervous to be around the big star of Brady Parkinson's.
Well, that may be part of it, too. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I do have AFib. I'm coming up on 4 years since I was diagnosed. I do have Parkinson's, and I do have AFib as well, which I've had for a period of time, actually much longer than the Parkinson's. Mm. So you combine the two. And it's a little more difficult to do things than it used to be, but I've been blessed. It has not affected my voice at all. It has not affected my ability to drive, because getting to these games involves getting out on the road and doing what you need to do. So I'm living with it. Well, this is going to be my 22nd year at Norwich, so that with 18 at UVM would bring me to 40 years total doing college hockey play-by-play. I want to go at least a couple more years. I would like to think about, I won't say retiring, but certainly scaling back a little bit a couple of years down the road. My wife is still several years away from retirement, and if we could both retire at the same time, that might be kind of cool, but you know, we'll see where it goes.
Well, we are looking forward to another year at Centennial Field. We are taping this prior to opening day. It's going to air after opening day. So we look forward to more time for you at Centennial Field. We look forward to more time for you at Kreuzberg Arena coming up at Norwich, Sabine Field, which is a beautiful new football facility over the last couple of years over at Norwich as well. So George Como, legendary broadcaster in the area. 40 years we're coming up on doing college hockey, as you just said. It's been an amazing run. It's been 7 years or so since I've gotten to know you. I'm looking forward to continuing to get to know you as well and seeing you out. And we all wish you continued good health, because we want to hear you. We want to hear you on the calls for many sports for a long time coming.
Well, you guys here are just doing a tremendous job with the game, and you know all the good stuff you do, of course, with Rich and Arnie and all the great folks you have on your staff. And we look forward to crossing paths many times here in the next few years.
George, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brady.